Stay tuned for Bob and Yurt Live, but first, here's our Denver Bible Church update with an excerpt from this week's sermon.
Some of us obviously have dads who are not Christians. Some have dads who are Christians. My dad was not a Christian through all of my childhood growing up. And I became a Christian, went off to Bible college. And the speaker of one of every day we went to chapel. And chapel was mostly a total waste of time because everybody at Bible college had to go and no one paid attention. And no one could even remember who the speakers were, what they said. But there was one speaker who I had known from Youth for Christ, campus life. His name is Ron Hutchcraft. And he spoke about your fathers and what impact they've had in your life. And I'm thinking, well, my dad's not a Christian. I wish he was. And Ron Hutchcraft said, you know, if your father's not a Christian, maybe he's thinking we're all away at college. He said, you could write him a letter. You could write him a letter and thank him for everything he's done for you that has been a blessing. And so I went back to my dorm room and I thought, and I prayed and I asked, God, help me to write this letter. And I thought, what has my dad done for me that's been a blessing? And he was not a Christian, not at all. He was a construction worker, grew up without a dad in his home. His dad was an alcoholic who died when my dad was young. So my dad was a bit rough around the edges. But as I thought about it, I thought, you know, my dad taught me to work and work hard. And he taught me not to steal. He taught me not to hit my brothers or my sister for that matter. And when I went through it, there were so many things that my father taught me that were in the Bible. And my dad didn't read the Bible. But he had obviously picked up these moral principles from the culture and his mother. And so I wrote him a letter thanking him for being the dad that he was, that raised me to have a respect for God even. Because he did. I had to go to church every week. He didn't go. And so I thanked him for all those things he had done, and he wrote me back the most wonderful letter. Because he was not emotional. He didn't hug. He didn't talk much. And he wrote me back a wonderful letter, and it was shortly after that he became a Christian. And he really did get saved. His life changed, and it was just wonderful. And then a few years later, he died of a heart attack, but he's with the Lord now. And I'm so thankful for him being my dad.
This is Pastor Bob Enyart of Denver Bible Church, inviting you to visit us at denverbiblechurch.com on the web, or, hey, why not come out in person this Sunday at 6200 West Hampton, that's near Hampton and Wadsworth. Come for our lively Sunday school class in Matthew, that's at 9:30 in the morning. We really have a good time. It's fully interactive. Bottom line, it's a blast. The discussions we have in the Gospel of Matthew brings us all through the life and ministry of Jesus Christ. Or you can come for our worship service at 11 o'clock or Sunday night for the Bible study in Colossians. Now, while the Sunday school is interactive, the Colossians study is more of a classroom setting where there's a presentation for 45 minutes. We're in Colossians chapter 1. Starts at 6 o'clock, and then we have break time, coffee, and dessert, and then Q&A. Q&A and sharing for another half hour. So whether it's Sunday morning for Sunday school, the worship service, or Sunday night, I'd like to invite you out to Denver Bible Church. That's at 6200 West Hampton, or you can call us for directions at 303-463-1707. That's 303-463-1707. Now stay tuned for Bob and Yart Live. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed, right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. A few things going on out there. One is that the plaintiff in Roe v. Wade, Norma McCorvey, she's the Roe of Roe v. Wade, the U.S. Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion nationwide. She is now a pro-lifer. She's become a Christian. And she is with a Christian pro-life attorney, Alan Parker. She is petitioning the court to reopen her original case and to reverse the decision that she won. So we'll be talking about that. That is apparently their strong legal precedence for being able to go back to court in the case that you have won and ask the court to reverse their decision. And that'll be quite a challenge since it's a pro-abort court. But still, it's a fascinating development. Also, that same day as Roe v. Wade, there was another case, Doe v. Bolton. And that case with Roe v. Wade legalized abortion through all 9 months, if the states would permit that individually, and many have. So we'll get to that story. And then also there's a columnist in WorldNet Daily, and her name is Ilana Mercer. And she did a column this past week on George W. Bush's crimes regarding bringing us into war against Iraq versus Bill and Hillary's insignificant crimes. And so we have invited Ilana Mercer to debate her column on the show, and she has responded tentatively with a yes, and she's going to get in touch with our publicist, Ray Graybar, to work out the details. So that'll be interesting. Hopefully we'll still do that yet this week. But first, I want to talk about, oh, by the way, our phone number is 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. I want to bring you up to date on the Battle Royale at TheologyOnline.com. Now, TheologyOnline.com, I'm going to that website right now. It's one of the most popular Christian sites on the web. It's got over a million posts from Christians, atheists, conservatives, liberals, debating issues in the Bible, current events, morality. And at the very top of Theology Online, their homepage, is a banner, Does God Exist? Battle Royale 7, Bob Enyart versus Zaketh. Click here. And so I've just clicked here. And the Battle Royales on Theology Online, they're not like the normal forums. The normal forum, anyone can post. Anyone, even our show engineer, could post on a normal forum on TheologyOnline.com. But in the Battle Royale, it's a debate between two people, and the moderator will not allow other posts. And so we have Zaketh, the atheist, has made his first post. Now, this has been planned for the last month. It's been widely publicized on Theology Online. You could get the Battle Royale 7 T-shirt if you'd like to order that. It's really a fun event. And so what I'd like to do is read to you the post by this atheist and let you know the atheist, Zaketh, he's put his bio up on the site at the request of the moderator. And he doesn't give his actual name, so we don't know his real identity. But he says he's, for 2.5 years, he's posted on Theology Online. In fact, I think he has over 3,000 posts. Is that right? And he is an atheist with a past. The man behind the screen name was raised in a Christian home, seminary trained, earned a doctorate in counseling psychology, pastored two churches, founded a Christian school and a Christian counseling practice with his wife of 25 years. Zaketh left the Christian faith almost 10 years ago, eventually ending up in his present belief system, atheism. Zaketh is the father of four grown children, two in active duty military service, and two in the federal consulting field, whatever that is. When he's not posting on Theology Online, he runs his own consulting business, enjoys reading, organic gardening and ponding, martial arts, and home brewing. Okay, so that's who my opponent is in this debate. And the moderator has posted that both Zaketh and Bob have given me their acknowledgement that they understand the rules of the battle. So the battle is on. And Zaketh yesterday posted his first post. And the rules are that we have 10 rounds. We each post 10 times. And after your opponent posts, you have 48 hours to post your reply or to bring the debate forward. So I want to read to you Zaketh's post, number one, and then we could, if you'd like, we could talk about, think about an appropriate response, a rebuttal. But I think what I'll do is wait until I actually post my rebuttal before I get into it in detail. So that will be on tomorrow night's show. So let's begin with Zaketh's post, and we'll complete it after this first break. By the way, the phone number here, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Okay, Zaketh's post number one. First of all, I would like to thank our good Sir Knight for hosting this debate here on Theology Online. By the way, the moderator's handle, his username, is Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T. So Zaketh, always one to join in the spirit of a debate, says, I'd like to thank our good Sir Knight for hosting this debate here on Theology Online. I think that he is doing a great service for his website and his readers by providing this sort of venue for these discussions. Next, I would like to thank Reverend Bob Enyart. Now, I don't know if that's the first time anyone's called me Reverend. We have at least a number of people from the church in the studio audience. Am I called Reverend. We're to revere God. Certainly, no one needs to revere me except for my young children. All right, so I don't need the title Reverend. Next, I would like to thank Rev Bob Enyart for making the time available out of, as I recall from my time as a pastor, a busy schedule. And we will be back after this. Listener-supported radio, and this is a live commercial break. Our phone number for calling in is also the number with which you can reach our order desk at 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Now, I've been talking on the show about this debate on Theology Online, Does God Exist? Well, it just so happens that we have a video we've just released, our latest video called Does God Exist? And it's a fun video, 2 hours. It opens up at a graveyard, an eerie-looking graveyard in the Rocky Mountains. 100-year-old grave. The tombstones are just crumbling. You could barely figure out who it is that's buried under these stones. That's where we open the debate in this video, Does God Exist? By Bob Enyart Live. And in the opening, I mentioned that this is where we all end up. Eventually, we die, and generally buried, or, of course, cremated. And what? In a forgotten cemetery somewhere? Is that it? Does it end when we die, or does our life go on? what are the arguments for and against the existence of God? So you can get that video, Does God Exist? And the video, Confronting an Atheist. Two really enjoyable videos from Bob and Yurt Live, 800-836-9278. And welcome to our live commercial break. This is, we actually have a couple different segments in these live breaks. You know, live radio is like trial by fire. And since we have a few affiliates, some of our affiliates join us at different times, just to let you know. And for those who are interested in Bob and Yurt Live, but not quite sure, where does Bob get his ideas from? Well, we get them out of the Bible, a systematic study, an overview of the Bible for over 30 years now. Wow. No, just approaching 30 years. That's right. In September of 1973, I was a freshman in high school. That's when I became a Christian. So where do we get our ideas from? The Bible. And boy, do we have a lot of Bible tools for you to study the Word. So call us and join us. Welcome back to Bob and Yurt Live, 1-800-8-N-YURT, 1-800-836-9278. So I'm bringing to you the first post of the atheist in the Battle Royale. And he's just introduced himself. He at one point was a pastor, he says, and with a busy schedule. My understanding is that we have 10 posts for this debate, so I will proceed with this, my first post. And let me stop right there and make a couple observations that I will not make in my posts and in the Battle Royale itself. But Zacheth says that he was a pastor, and he recalls from his time as a pastor. And he states in his bio, and I can tell the way he states it, he expects that it will make an impact on Christians when he says that he is an atheist who was raised in a Christian home and seminary trained, and he earned a doctorate in counseling psychology. And he pastored two churches, founded a Christian school and a Christian counseling practice with his wife of 25 years, and then left the Christian faith. And maybe some who read that would think, wow, with all that Christian upbringing and Christian education, it's surprising that he had a crisis of faith. But for the more conservative Christians in America, there's a general common knowledge that our seminaries are terribly liberal and that they undermine faith in God. And that a doctorate in counseling psychology, that psychology is basically humanistic and undermines faith in the Bible. And even at Christian schools and seminaries, the counseling programs are secular. I've got a dear friend. In fact, if I mentioned his name, you would know him. And he's well known in Colorado government. And I'm not going to mention his name. Those of you who go to Denver Bible Church will know who I'm talking about. And he has attended Denver Seminary and shared with us that at Denver Seminary, he took a counseling class. And at the end of the semester, he went to the professor. And this is Denver Seminary, conservative Christian Bible seminary. At the end of the semester, he went to the professor and said, "Do you realize that you never once mentioned the Bible?" And the professor said, now this guy has a tremendous tremendous career, a reputation, well known in the state, very influential, extremely influential. And so if it was a young, you know, a 20-something seminary student with no history, no reputation, no career, the professor maybe just would have blown him off or said, well, you know, I taught it the way I wanted to teach it. But he was very respectful and said, you know, I didn't think about it. You're right. We didn't even mention the Bible. I need to correct that. But my guess is it's not going to be corrected in the next class. It's just, it's the way it is in so many Christian schools. In pastoring churches, so many pastors are liberal, as are Christian schools and Christian counseling programs. So at any rate, it would be of interest to find out, you know, what kind of a background specifically Zaccheth has regarding his seminary experience, the passion for the gospel that he brought into his Christian life. Did he, you know, like fundamentalist Christians will go out on the streets sometimes in cities and witness on the streets and teach people about God, against abortion and homosexuality, against evolution, against other religions, and for Jesus Christ as the only way to heaven. And so I'd like to find out, just because I'm curious, how fundamental was his faith, or was he part of the liberal Christian community, which we have said for 12 years on the show is post-Christian. It's no longer Christian. At any rate, now let's get to continue with his post into the substance of it. Our debate is an attempt to answer the question, does God exist? This is a very important question for humans, Zaccheth writes, because if any of the gods or goddesses that humans have claimed throughout the ages actually exist, it tells us something about what is happening in the world, as well as what may yet happen in the future. On the other hand, if none of these supernatural entities exist, it tells us that we humans are left to our own resources, that we have to make decisions wisely, and that we cannot depend upon a big brother or mother, for our Wiccan readers, in the sky to solve our problems for us. That said, the first thing we must do is clarify just what the good reverend means by the term God. So my first question to Reverend Enyart is, Mr. Reverend, Reverend Enyart, Rev, can you answer this question, Rev? No, actually, I added the last three revs. The last three repetitions of Rev. But he said we must clarify just what the good reverend means by the term God. So my first question to Rev Enyart is, how do you define God? How do you define God? So in my reply post, right at the top, I'll put question number one from Zaccheth, how do you define God? And then I'll give him a definition. And then right beneath that, question number two, I'll list this question with an answer so that we set the standard for actually answering people's questions. When they ask a direct question, you provide a direct answer. Sometimes people don't like to provide a direct answer because they feel like, well, it might strengthen their position if they provide a really long answer. And so sometimes perhaps that's the case, but it seems generally people do that because they feel that their direct answer is weak. And so I'm going to try to answer his questions directly and right at the top of the post. And then any questions that I have at the bottom of the post, summarize those questions. But I would like to make another observation, something I will not put in my post on, is this last paragraph where he said, if there is no God, if there is no God, then it tells us that we humans are left to our own resources and that we have to make decisions wisely. Now, notice that. his implication. He doesn't come out and state it. So he's just subtly implying that if you believe in a God, somehow you believe that there's no need to make decisions wisely. That if you believe in God, you're a theist, you adhere to a religion, that you must believe there's no need for wisdom. And of course, in the Bible, wisdom is promoted as one of the greatest of virtues. And the Bible stresses the importance for wisdom, and it teaches how to obtain wisdom. And so just sliding that in there, on the other hand, if none of these gods exist, Zaketh writes, it tells us that we humans are left to our own resources, that we have to make decisions wisely. And again, I don't think this rises to the level of needing a response in a reply. The replies, there are only 10, and therefore they're very scarce economic resources, these replies, and precious space on the screen. And so I'm not going to reply to that either, but Zaketh is implying that if you believe in a God, it goes without saying you don't need to make decisions wisely. Because if he says if there is no God, then we have to make decisions wisely. And if we think that through, I think we can make a strong case that he's exactly wrong there. That if there is a God, you have to make decisions wisely. If there is no God, it doesn't matter what you do. If there is no God. Because everybody dies. Everybody's dead. And the people who died as of yesterday, all the people who ever lived, they're all equally dead. If there is no God, there's no judgment day. There's no afterlife. So maybe some had more pleasure than others. Maybe some develop their self-control, self-discipline to a more a significant degree than others. But what's the difference? What is the difference? Why is it important to make wise decisions if there is no God? Some people live just for pleasure. Some people don't care. Some people are despondent about life and have a fatalistic view of existence, and they just don't care. So how can an atheist make the argument that if there is no God, we have to make decisions wisely? And it would be one thing if Zaketh developed that as a point and gave evidence or argument for that point, but he just slips it in there. On the other hand, if no God exists, it tells us we humans are left to our own resources, that we have to make decisions wisely, and that we cannot depend upon a big brother or big mother, for the Wiccan readers, in the sky to solve our problems for us. And the Christian religion, which Zaketh knows that I adhere to, teaches that most people will go to hell. Most people will go to hell. And so there are really significant problems that human beings must face, and they better make wise decisions. So the laissez-faire attitude that Zaketh is implying goes with Christianity just doesn't. Now, I have 1 minute with you guys on the Information Radio Network and on KGov.com while our Denver affiliate is off doing a local spot. Isn't that rude of them? Isn't that rude of them to do a local spot? No, not really. It's one of our advertisers. Of course it's not rude. If you would like to advertise on Bob Benyart Live, and your ad will be heard in the Denver area, in any of our Bob and Your Live radio affiliates that come and go over time, and on the internet at kgov.com. If you'd like to advertise, you should give us a call at 1-800-8-NYART, 800-836-9278. We have great rates and a very loyal audience. You could advertise your book, your idea, your business, your ministry, right here on Bob and Yart Live. And this is listener-supported radio, Bob and Yart Live, with our phone number. Our call-in number is also our order line number. So you can call us at 800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. And if you do, you could consider the plot manuscript, our overview of the whole Bible. It's 330 pages, $49.95. So it's expensive, plus shipping and handling. Now, we have had people read the plot who have told us that they learned more about the Bible from the plot than they did in going to seminary and getting a degree, or than they did from 30 years of going to church, or they did in their first eight years of their Christian life. And those are extraordinary compliments. And of course, we'd rather you decide for yourself how valuable a tool is the plot, so you can order it with a money-back guarantee, a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get the plot, and if you read the first, say you read 30 pages a week for the first 3 weeks, and you think you haven't already learned more than you would ever dream of learning for that amount of money, money-back guarantee. But on the other hand, so many people have thanked us for helping them understand the Bible, and that's our goal, so give us a call and read it. one 800 8 NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. So I'd like to continue now with Zacchaeus' post, his first post. He gave an introduction, a thank you to good Sir Knight and to Bob and Yart for doing the debate. And he explained how important the question is there a God? Because whether there is or there is not, there's a significant investment in human effort into the question of, is there a God? And so it's important for us to know if we can know. And that said, the first thing we must do, Zacchaeus wrote, is clarify just what the good reverend means by the term God. So my first question to Reverend Enyar is, how do you define God? And what I will do is, at the very top of my post, I'll have an introductory paragraph, a thank you, and then I'll have a question one, how do you define God? Answer one, and I'll give Zacchaeus my definition of God. And it will be a definition that describes the God of the Bible. I won't mention the Bible. I'm not going to mention Jesus Christ, but I'll describe the God of the Bible, who is Jesus Christ, God the Son, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. But we're debating the existence of God. And so I'm going to leave it at in terms of a description, a generic description of the God of the Bible. Okay. Then let's continue with his post. Since there is a significant amount of variation of meaning for this term God, even within the thousand sects of Christianity, thousands of sects of Christianity, your answer will set the tone for the debate, since I need to understand just what it is you are trying to prove the existence of. If you answer the first question, there is a second question that deals with evidence. And it's clear to me why Zacchaeus wrote if you answer the first question, because in my experience, when I read posts on forums, quite often there people ignore the questions and they do not directly answer the questions. And so that could get a bit frustrating for someone who is invested in the discussion. And so I will directly answer his first question and thereby hopefully further set the tone of how we should respond to one another if possible. If there's a yes or no question, there should be answer yes, and then here's why. Okay. So if you answer the first question, there is a second question that deals with evidence. All religions claim the existence of evidence to support their particular view of what they claim about their gods or goddesses. And he has parentheses around the S and the ES. So all religions claim the existence of evidence to support their particular view of what they claim about their gods or goddesses. Understanding the evidence that a believer relies upon to support the assertion that, quote, God exists, unquote, is critical to the success of our debate. Since many Christians of my acquaintance claim there is evidence to support their belief, it would appear, and listen to this part, it would appear that the Christian religion is much like any of the others in this case. And I find that interesting. And he goes on to post a second question asking me for what evidence do I have to support my belief in God. So before we continue, let's look at that paragraph. And again, we'll look at it and I'll make some observations that I won't put in my post. Okay, all religions claim the existence of evidence to support their particular view of what they claim. Now, that statement right there, you know, when you're in a debate and you're committing the debate to writing, presumably you're going to be extremely careful about what you say. And all religions claim the existence of evidence to support their particular view of what they claim. And now, that may be true, but I don't know. I haven't investigated all religions. And I haven't investigated religion sufficiently enough to confidently make that claim. There are people that adhere to the most bizarre belief systems that they claim as religions that they really hardly take themselves or their belief systems seriously. And they just don't care. The United Methodist, that's a major denomination, mainstream, a mainline Christian denomination, although a post-Christian denomination, which no longer believes in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. By the way, I'd love to know what denomination Zacchaeus was a part of. I'd love to know that. But at any rate, the United Methodist Church voted in Denver, Colorado, at their national convention just a few years ago. They voted officially. This is part of their church policy that you don't have to believe in anything to be a member in good standing of the United Methodist Church. You don't have to believe in anything. So if that's fundamental to your religion, that you don't have to believe in anything to be a member, then I would think that there may be many within that religion, many of influence, that do not claim that evidence supports their particular view. In fact, it's a somewhat common theme among liberals in religion that all paths lead to heaven and all gods are equally valid. You know, as long as you give your 10%, everything is cool. No. So I don't know about that claim. Maybe it's possible that Zacchaeus has actually investigated that point. Perhaps he's taken a representative sample of religions and investigated, do they all claim the existence of evidence to support their particular view? Now, Hinduism believes in Vishnu, And the gods of Hinduism and Vishnu or Krishna, or there, how many gods are in Hinduism? Well, I don't know. I don't have time to count them all. But Krishna created everything, and Krishna created nothing. And all of existence is Maya. Maya or illusion. So existence is illusion in Hinduism. So with that kind of Eastern mysticism, that existence is illusion, all the universe is illusion, and Krishna created everything, Krishna created nothing. With that kind of gobbledygook as your worldview, I don't know what kind of evidence they would bring to the table to say, here is the evidence that we are right and your God is a false God. I don't know, but maybe they do, and I'm sure some do, but do all Hindu authorities present evidence to support their particular view of what God is like? Or in this case, of what God is like and what he isn't like, in the case of Hinduism. But then there's another sleight of hand that Zacchaeus pulls off in this short paragraph. He says that all religions claim the existence of evidence, and that the Christians that I know claim that there is evidence, and it would appear that the Christian religion, therefore, is much like any of the others in this case. Right? Now, that's sort of like guilt by association. We could say, let's say we wanted to put down some political party, maybe the Contras in Nicaragua. And so we say the Nazis ate bread and the Contras ate bread. The Nazis drank water and the Contras drank water. Do you see in this respect that the Contras are just like the Nazis? Now, the examples I'm giving are so trite. They're so petty. It's obvious to see the trick and how silly it is. But if your subject matter is a little bit more complex than eating bread and drinking water, if it's using evidence, the skill of apologetics to defend your belief system, then you could draw a comparison between one group and other groups, and just the reader might think you just made a really good point. But just because you bring evidence to prove your case doesn't mean that your case is invalid. In fact, it's not even a negative thing, but rather it is a positive thing. The Bible says that faith is the evidence of things not seen. The Bible asks for rational belief. Bob Inyard here. Our phone number you can use to call into the show or to order. The phone number is 1-800-8-INYARD. And in the last break, I was telling you about the plot manuscript, our overview of the whole Bible. Let me ask you a question. When you open up the Bible, if you open it up and begin reading at some chapter, wherever in the Bible, in fact, you should try that. Try that right now, after the show, tomorrow, Sunday, when you're sitting in church. Open it up and start reading at a certain chapter. And ask yourself, be very aware, do I understand what's going on? Do I understand the storyline? Do I understand why these things are happening? The meaning of these things? Are there statements in this chapter that appear to contradict what I believe or what I've heard on Christian radio? When you read the chapter, are you confident about the material in the chapter? If you were asked pressing questions about the verses in that chapter, the stories in the chapter, would you be able to answer them? Now, many Christians, even those who've studied the Bible for many years, struggle and are somewhat lacking in confidence regarding the Word because there are so many apparent contradictions in the Bible. Apparent contradictions. And most Christians don't know how to deal with them. I'll give you an example. In the Bible, Jesus says that if you do not forgive others their sins, God will not forgive you. That you first have to forgive others, and then God will forgive you. So first, you have to forgive others. That's a prerequisite. That's a requirement. And then God will forgive you. That's the consequence of you first forgiving others. Now, if you look at the questions of law and grace, and you say, is that law or is that grace? That you first have to do this good work of forgiving others, and then you can be forgiven. Does that sound more like law or more like grace? Well, you should be able to answer that instantly. But then the Apostle Paul says something quite different. And we'll have to wait to another commercial break on another show to get to that. Welcome back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. So Zacchaeus, the atheist that I am debating in this Battle Royale 7 on TheologyOnline.com, Zacchaeus has just slipped this little jab that the Christian religion is much like any of the others in this case. And, of course, if there are thousands of religions, and if their teachings contradict one another so that they're mutually exclusive, for example, if some religion says there is no hell and Christianity says there is a hell, well, then their teachings are mutually exclusive. They can't both be true. And so if there are so many religions, and really they're all like one another in the most fundamental of ways, and since there's so many religions and they obviously contradict one another, then there you could have guilt by association. So the Christian religion is much like any of the others in this case. In what case? Oh, that we present evidence to support our claims? Isn't it better to present evidence than not to present evidence? For example, Mormonism is much like the Unification Church, Sun Myung Moon, in this respect, in that they tell their proselytes, they tell the people they are evangelizing, they say, just ask God if this is true. Ask God if it's true. And if he tells you in your heart it's true, then you'll know it's true. And so when we invited two Mormons to come and deliver the message at Denver Bible Church Sunday night some months back, that was their evidence. Ask God if it's true. And that's very subjective evidence. The Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons make the same truth claim. Ask God if it's true, and in your heart, you'll find out if it's true or not. So people do that, and many people come up with the answer, no, it's not true. And others say Jehovah's Witnesses are true, and others say the Mormons are true or correct. And so it's a very subjective truth test, and it's not really evidence. It's subjectivism. But the Bible says that faith is the evidence of things not seen. So faith is not blind faith. In fact, I believe that atheists have blind faith in the origins of the universe and biological life and personality. That they have blind faith that these things would just come about by physical laws and chance. I call that blind faith because there is no evidence to support those wild claims. I'd like to see the evidence that they can point to show that life has or would tend to spring from non-life. I'd like to see the evidence they have to support their particular view of what they claim. I'd like to see that evidence. I'd like to see their evidence about how the universe came into existence. You know, the universe, has it always been here? Is it a perpetual motion machine? Always working and burning? Or did it come into existence from nothing? Like pulling itself up by its own bootstraps? Did it boot itself up and bring itself into existence? So it's either the natural universe has always been here, or it came into existence on its own at some point in the past, or it was brought into existence by a supernatural creator, something outside of the natural universe. Those are your three choices. And so I'd like to see their evidence of how the universe came about, how life came about. All right. And so the Christian religion is much like any of the others in this case. In what case? In that Christians present evidence to support their beliefs. That's pretty admirable. That's admirable. That's scientific. Right? The scientific process, you make observations, you build hypotheses, you test them you look at evidence to develop theories, and you substantiate ideas based on observation and evidence. That's the scientific method. And the Bible does not describe faith the way some atheists might, or the way some liberals might, by believing in something you know isn't true. In fact, that's how people use faith. Something they know, they've been confronted with some reality. They know, you know, somebody has died or some terrible thing has happened, and they say, I refuse to believe it. I believe it hasn't happened. And that bizarre sense, that very unbiblical sense, faith is believing something you know isn't true. But the Bible says faith is the evidence of things not seen. That's pretty cool. You can't see gravity, but you have evidence that gravity exists. So you believe in gravity based on the evidence. And you can't see God, since he is a spirit, but you believe in God based on the evidence for his existence. So Zacchaeus then says, for the second question, I would ask you the following. Upon what evidence do you base your belief in what you defined as God? Upon what evidence do you base your belief in what you defined as God? And so at the very top of my reply post, I will have question one, how do you define God? And I'll define the traditional Christian God. And question two, upon what evidence do you base your belief in what you defined as God? And I will have my answer number two, which I will provide evidence based on the origins of the universe, the physical universe, and life, biological life. And those are two pieces of evidence I will begin to develop in my first post. And then, with time permitting, I will go on to add other evidence, that there is a God, and I will do so out of history, and astronomy, and psychology, or the study of human beings. All right, so let's see. Let's finish with Zacchaeus' post. Your answers to these two questions will provide us with a foundation and boundaries within which to continue the debate without potentially wandering off into the philosophical weeds. I await your reply. And the reply Zacheth will get. Tomorrow, I plan on posting my reply. I'm floating it to a handful of friends to get their input. This is not like a chess match where you can't consult anyone. And your opponent, when you retire for the evening before you continue the game, like let's say Bobby Fischer is playing Spassky. And so what Spassky will do is he'll write down his next move and put it in a sealed envelope. And it'll stay in the envelope overnight. And then the next morning, the referee opens the envelope, makes the move, and then Bobby Fischer goes from there. So that you can't consult. You don't know what direction he's going. You're not supposed to consult. But forums on the internet are not like that. You're allowed to, it's an open book test. In developing your post, you're allowed to consult encyclopedias, textbooks, scientific reference works, philosophical treatises, search the internet. And so we will put a real effort into answering Zacheth's questions and then presenting him with questions. So my plan is to answer his two questions and then to present four to him. And I will summarize those four questions very succinctly at the bottom of my rebuttal post, which will be sent up tomorrow to Theology Online. So, hey, we're excited about this Battle Royale 7 at theologyonline.com. Please be a part of it. You can't post in the battle, but you can be in the galley, and you could discuss the debate on the sidelines. And that's a lot of fun. You'll enjoy it. So check it out, theologyonline.com. Of course, you could get the link to the Battle Royale from our website at kgov.com. And then tomorrow night, let's plan on talking about Roe v. Wade, Norma McCorvey, the Roe of Roe v. Wade, asking to have her own decision overturned. That's a new development. And also, Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, both of the women in those landmark abortion cases given on the same day in 1973, both those women are now pro-lifers. Pro-lifers and looking to have their cases overturned. How many times has that happened in the history of the Supreme Court, where a plaintiff wins at the Supreme Court and then goes back and asks for the case to be overturned? You know how many times it's happened? Never. Never. But when the decision is, we give you the right to kill your children, then you like to think that somewhere, someone will be humble enough to say, we were wrong. It's wrong to kill unborn children. The court was wrong. We should have never made the argument. And we want to go back and to set things right. But how do you set right 40 million children killed at the request of their own mothers? How do you set that right? How do you set tens of millions of moms who've become murderers? How do you set that right? This is Bob Benyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.